When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
It's amazing what skin to skin can do. And, you know, a lot of NICUs are encouraging it just because we know that your breasts and your heartbeat regulates your baby's heartbeat. And the warmth of your body is warming up your baby's body. I practice the division of responsibility. I don't know if you've heard of that phrase.
No.
But it's where you are the parent. So you decide what, when, and where. So what the food is going to be, when you're going to serve the food, and where.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the podcast. Your girl Lauren here, and we're going to dive right into it today. We are tackling one of the most, if not the most overwhelming obstacle I feel like we have as mothers or as parents, and that is around feeding. Whether that's feeding your littles, it starts with breastfeeding, right? Whether it's breastfeeding or choosing to pump or how you're going to feed or choosing the right formula to feed your babies and what comes with that. Whether it's feeding your toddlers and they're very, like my kids are in the beige stage where they just don't want to eat anything that's not like buttered noodles or chicken nuggets or Cheerios. It's been really fun. Or you're feeding your older kids or your teenagers who are currently, my teen eats more than all of us in the family combined. That's including my husband. Okay, y'all. Like his budget for his meals would be like, if we let him run rampant, it would be like $1,000 a week, just him. But we don't let him do that. Times are hard. We are not doing that. But feeding at any stage, whether it's yourself, whether it's your kids, can be very overwhelming. And not to mention just feeding your sanity, because I don't know about y'all, but I feel a little bit off these days. But this is why I'm so grateful today to have today's guest. Her name is Allegra Gast. She's a functional registered dietitian, a certified lactation consultant, and she knows she's a twin mama, okay? She got that twin mama energy, so she gets the chaos. Allegra runs Aloha Nutrition, a virtual practice that helps families all over the world feel supported in postpartum, breastfeeding, and figuring out what their bodies actually need. She brings so much heart and softness to the conversation. You're not going to come out of this feeling very guilty because, I mean, we're not coming to judge or perfectionism. We all have our days where we're like, okay, breakfast for dinner? Sure. Actually, side note, I thought my parents were being really fun when they had breakfast for dinner or pizza nights. And I realized mama was just tired. I get it. And I've been there. So I'm actually in the middle, though, of taking one of her nutrition tests through Aloha Nutrition because I realized in this conversation how malnourished I am, where I'm not sleeping right, I'm very stressed, my brain fog, all these are tied to your nutrition. If you all know, I've shared on the podcast before that really healing my gut, I think drove, like it, I felt phenomenal. I eliminated all these foods and took the right supplements that my body needed. And not only did I heal my acne, but I think it made me fertile because I was told I couldn't have kids and then I had twins. That was due to my nutrition. So I kind of want to get back to that. I ain't trying to have more twins, but I know nutrition is fundamental to like gut health, brain health, hormonal health. And so this episode, I'm hoping to get back to that. I'm in the process of doing her test. I'll have updates for how that goes on my IG stories and in my reels, but stay tuned there. But all to say, in this convo, we talk about from the beginning, from breastfeeding, or if you're pregnant and the nutrition that you should have, to healing your body without spiraling into diet culture, or when your feeding plan goes completely sideways with your little ones and they just want to eat, you know, buttered noodles for the fifth night in a row. Allegra actually throws me some great tips of how to get toddlers to eat more nutrition. With that, I hope this episode you learned something or feel motivated to maybe do just something small either for you. Drink some water while you listen, okay? Let's take care of ourselves. Let's take care of our kids. And I hope y'all love it just as me. Let's do it. This is That Twin Mama Podcast. But hey, you don't have to be a twin mom to be here. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. So whether you are new, soon to be, or seasoned parent, or maybe you just hope to have kids someday, I promise you'll find something to love, learn from, or laugh at in each episode. I'm your host, Lauren Birdie. Let's do it.
All right, welcome, y'all. I have an exciting guest here today, a fellow twin mama, mama of four, my girl Allegra. Allegra, thank you so much for being on the cast.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Okay, I just want to dive straight in because if you're a twin mom, you know, and I know you are also a lactation consultant, a nutritionist, like you know all the things. So, and you also had your boys that are older than your twins. Your twins are your youngest, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I have a 6-year-old daughter and then a 3-year-old son and then the twins.
The two boys. Mm-hmm. And they just turned one in like March, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then did you breastfeed everyone?
So I was a lactation consultant before I had my first. And so going through that first experience, I was like, wow, this actually is hard.
Yeah.
I breastfed her and then I got pregnant with my second one and continued to nurse both of them. So I tandem fed them both for about 15 months. So nursed throughout my whole pregnancy.
Okay. Pause. So you tandem fed before twins?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So you already had that kind of experience too. That's fascinating. So did you feed while you're pregnant too?
Like, yeah. So my supply dropped around 12 weeks, I would say, but my daughter continued dry nursing, and there were definitely challenges. You get really bad nursing aversions if anyone has breastfed during their pregnancy.
Yeah.
Like those aversions are just like you just want to toss your child across.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds horrible, but like it's hard, but I really wanted to tandem feed both of them. I just feel like there's something so beautiful nursing your toddler and your baby. But tandem feeding twins, two newborns, is so much different than like a toddler and one newborn.
Yes. Okay. So I'm curious because to me, you were like the ultimate expert as far as someone that would be able to go into tandem feeding twins with like as much knowledge as you possibly can without actually already having a set of twins. Like you were a lactation consultant, you'd already nursed one baby, then you tandem fed two babies, even though they weren't the same age. Oh, also you said dry nursing. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I just had no milk. And there's like nothing coming out. So typically when you're pregnant, your supply drops because those hormones that produce breast milk compete with the hormones of pregnancy. So my supply dropped, but she continued nursing and it was purely comfort. She would just continue nursing. I never heard any swallows. I would squeeze and nothing would really come out. And so then around probably 25 weeks during pregnancy, I had colostrum. So I would occasionally hear some swallows, but really it was just like comfort. And then once I delivered, she was a boob monster. She wanted to nurse. She's like all this.
Finally.
And
okay. I just wanted to clarify. So that's interesting. It's like literally a comfort soothing thing, almost like a Binky or some sort of soother.
Yes.
Okay. I've never heard of that. Okay. And so now let's fast forward. You are pregnant with twins and you know you're going to breastfeed them. Was there anything that like kind of shocked you about that experience or still surprised you, even given all the experience and expertise you have in this?
Yeah. It's really kind of remembering that newborns have no head control. They're very wobbly. Right. They need a lot of support. Yeah. And with singletons and like my clients that I work with, I try to move them away from using a pillow or like depending on a pillow because I really believe like your body is that natural pillow. When you can find a good position, baby is well positioned on you that you don't need a pillow. But with twins, like I needed something to support one baby while I handled the other baby. And so I was kind of surprised how much I actually needed the pillow with the twins. And one of my babies had a much stronger suck than the other one. So I really had to work on baby B, who was smaller, he had the weaker suck. So I would typically latch baby A, who was strong. He had a better, more competent suck. So I'd latch him, get him positioned. And then I would work on baby B and get him positioned and just support him a little more, especially getting that initial suck.
How old were your twins? Were they premature at all?
Or no, did they come? 39 weeks and 4 days.
Yeah. What the hell? Every natural induced. Oh my God. Wait, did you get induced? Sorry, I didn't hear.
I ended up getting induced after trying to do all the natural things. I even did castor oil, which everyone was like, don't do that. Like I did the midwife's brew. I did the mile circuit training thing, ate spicy food, sex, walked around. Like I did everything that you read online to do and nothing. And so I, you know, my midwife or actually OB, she had wanted to induce at 38 weeks. And I was like, no, I really want my babies to keep cooking. And, you know, if everything is fine, medically, is there really a reason to induce? And she's like, honestly, it is kind of just a preference we have. But, you know, I'll let you keep going. And then my mom was leaving out of town like that weekend. And so I was like, you know what? I really want my mom to see the babies. Like it would be so sad if, you know, she came this way, was here for 2 weeks, because I told her my twins were going to come early. Everyone tells me the twins are going to come early. I was like, I guarantee they'll be here by 37, 38 weeks. And 37 weeks come, 38 come, 39 weeks comes, and there's no babies. And so yes, I ended up being induced at 39 weeks and 4 days, but my body only needed a small amount of Pitocin and they were able to turn it off. So I think my body just needed like a little kickstart.
Yeah, to get them out. Oh my goodness. How big were they then?
At 39? Baby A was 7 pounds, 8 ounces, and baby B was 6 pounds, 3 ounces. So.
Yo. Okay, Allegra, come through. Okay, so did you do a vaginal birth as well?
Yeah. So
how was that?
Unmedicated vaginal birth.
You were like the gold. Okay, go on.
Were unmedicated, so like I knew what to expect, and I kind of know my body at that point, like what the contractions are like. Like I always have contractions for like 30 seconds to 40 seconds, and then I have a break. So I kind of just like, you know, talk to myself. And then my husband's an amazing coach, and he would do the hip, you know, the counter pressure point type things. And that really helped. Thankfully my hospital had like a shower I could go into. And so, and I did have a doula. And so, yeah, I labored at the hospital. Mm-hmm. They were able to turn off the Pitocin. I could walk around, bounce on the ball. And then, the whole thing from like start to finish was probably like 5 or 6 hours. So once I felt the need to push, I was like, all right, it's time to push. And so pushed baby A out, and then baby B. So baby A was head down.
Yeah.
And just for the record, I had Dye-Dye twins. So I know that can always change things, because Dye-Dye is the least high risk.
Same.
And so I thought you had identical, you have identical Dye-Dye, right? No, they're not.
They're not identical. I thought they might have been when they were really young and then we were going to get them tested, but then they just start looking so different. And we're like, okay, they're not.
Yeah. Our Dye-Dye identical. So
they are?
Yeah, we did the DNA test at 3 months because they were like, they look a lot alike, but everyone told me that Dye-Dye automatically meant fraternal, but there's a 30% that chance that they can be identical. And so we did the DNA test and sure enough, they're identical.
That's awesome. That's like the golden goose. Like you have Dye-Dye, which is like the least risk, but like that's cool that they're also identical. Like that's a very rare, but also like easy, not easier, but just... If you are a twin mom and you're listening, there's Mo-Dye. And if you're not a twin mom, you're not going to know what we're talking about. But there's different ways that like where they can share a placenta, share a sac. And Dye-Dye, they have their own separate like sacs. And so it just is high risk, but not as high risk as if they're sharing everything in one sac.
Right.
But continue. So baby A was head down, you're saying.
Yeah, baby A was head down. He came out and then baby B flipped and went breech because, you know, there's all this room. Yeah. And my OB warned me that that could happen, but she's had a lot of success with turning babies. So she used the ultrasound and then she ended up going inside. And at this point, I mean, I already birthed baby A, so I was like, do whatever. I just want this baby B out. And so she was able to turn him, flip him down, head down. And then I was able to push baby B out vaginally as well.
And unmedicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that, I'm loving hearing this because I think Allegra too, as twin parents, we hear all these horror stories of like, you have to get a C-section or this is like, since you're high risk, this is what's going to happen. So I'm just hoping anyone listening that is expecting twins, and not saying a lot of things don't go to plan, but there are stories of where this is what you wanted and you were able to get, and one was even breached, like, which is wild. You know, I had a baby be breached as well. And so she told me to get the epidural because she's like, going inside, you will really hurt. And I was like, okay, I already, So yeah, how did that feel? For like, now
me, I was like, this does not hurt. I just pushed baby A out back. Like,
already, you know, gave birth.
Already been laboring and experiencing this pain. So I was like, it didn't hurt for me.
Oh my gosh.
But that's, I mean, it wasn't comfortable.
Was it?
Comfortable.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no. Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, like, I don't mind, like, I don't want a C-section if I don't have to. So I'll let her go inside and help flip baby B.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's so awesome. I didn't realize that before we chatted. So, okay. So now the babies are out, they're birthed. Okay. And did your milk come in right away? Like, how did that process work? Cause I know that a lot of moms, I forgot with my first that, like, it took a while for my milk to start producing. You have the colostrum, but with my twins, I feel like it was even more delayed. So I'm curious, how did the process work with you after you gave birth and now you're ready to breastfeed?
Yeah. So no, thankfully even with my singletons, typically my milk comes in around 2-3 days postpartum. So those first days, it's just the colostrum. So I would nurse one baby at a time just because I wanted to make sure that they were competent nursers. Yes. And then I would hand express afterwards just to make sure I was removing milk. They were removing milk. And if I needed to supplement, I had my colostrum. Baby B did have low blood sugar. And thankfully, the pediatrician there let me give my colostrum initially. So I had collected colostrum prenatally.
Oh, right.
Around like 35 weeks or so, I started just hand expressing gently and collecting my colostrum. And, you know, with twins, there is more risk of low blood sugar and even like bilirubin.
What is bilirubin? Just for the listeners that might not know.
Typically, like it could lead to jaundice. So it's when the liver does not, I guess, get rid of the red blood cells. And so it can start to accumulate and it can cause like a yellow tinge in babies' features. It can make them really sleepy.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to collect colostrum beforehand to, you know, just in case I needed it. So I brought some colostrum to the hospital with me and I just kept it in the nurse's refrigerator while I labored. And then once I delivered, had the babies, we saw that baby B had some low blood sugar. They said I could either give dextrose formula or my colostrum, try it out. And so I gave my colostrum and then just did lots of skin to skin. And your body, especially your breasts, will heat up your baby and warm them, which is so important for their blood sugar and their, you know, regulation, their body temperature regulation. So did a lot of that. And then the next hour or hour and a half when the pediatrician came back, blood sugar was good. So nice. I was really happy I had a little bit of that colostrum. So yeah, kind of going back to your question, I gave that colostrum, nursed them, and then my milk came in probably like 2 or 3 days postpartum. I felt that engorgement.
Yeah.
And just continued to nurse both babies. I did one at a time, but there were a few times when they were both awake and crying. Yeah. So I had my husband like help support the baby. And then while I get the other baby, and there's a lot of teamwork, especially initially.
Yes.
And
sometimes
when my husband would even grab my boob and like,
I want to pause you and go back for a second, because I think something you're naming is something that I experienced, but didn't have the knowledge that, when I had my babies, obvious, like they lost weight, their blood sugar was low. Like that's normal. And every twin parent listening, every baby like parent listening, that can happen. And my doctors, the hospital was really pressuring me to give them formula because they were losing weight. Right. And I did. And it wasn't really what I wanted, but they were like, they need something. And I didn't have a buildup of stuff. And so, but I talked with Shelly, a mutual friends of ours, shout out to Shelly, Twin Mom Guide. Right. And I think I'm curious from your perspective, like when I think there is a certain amount of weight that is actually okay for your baby to be losing in the hospital and they don't maybe need a supplementation. And there is a time where it's like, okay, potentially listen. But I'm curious from your perspective, is there like a rule of thumb, or you're lucky that you had built up colostrum, but is this something that you've seen with moms and pressures from hospital? What is your advice there?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I see this all the time. So yeah. especially if you've had the epidural, if you have medicine, if you're giving fluids, this excess fluid is going to baby. And then you birth them and they get their weight like right off the bat within that first hour before they've even had their first diaper. Mm-hmm. And this weight, this birth weight is then skewed. You know, it's this artificial weight because they have all this excess fluid. And then baby has their first wet diaper and they lose all this water weight. And then everyone starts freaking out that baby's lost all this weight. So I always encourage going off of 24 hours if you can, like the 24 hour mark, you know, when they're 24 hours old, get their weight to see what they are and kind of go off of that. I've read in some books, like in my textbook when I became an IBCLC, that as long as blood sugar is good, they're stable, like all their vitals are good, they essentially can go 24 hours. You know, once again, as long as everything is good, there's no blood sugar concerns because they just came from eating 24/7. So as long as they're still okay and, you know, they are awake, nursing at the breast, you know, you're checking their vitals. But the AAP, the Academy, American Academy of Pediatrics recommends, you know, if it's less, more than 10%, then you might want to supplement, but less than 10%, you know, I wouldn't worry.
That's super helpful.
So, and I've seen some hospitals push in at like 7%, 8% weight loss. I'm like, give the babies a chance. Like give these moms a chance. Yeah. Like, you know, start them with hand expressing and supplement with that. And, you know, once again, kind of consider any artificial water weight that might have skewed their birth weight. And kind of think about a baby being plump like a grape and then they lose all this weight and now they're a raisin. So
oh my gosh. That's so helpful. I wish I had known that. Like even the context of like, they have all this fluid and that's when we take their weight and they haven't even had their first diaper. Like that's, I'm not thinking about that. I just gave birth. I'm not thinking logically about like how to push back. You have doctors, a ton of them saying this needs to happen. You're like, okay. And so this, like, I'm just glad you're giving this context to any moms listening. Just whatever you want to do or whatever you feel you should do, do, but also just be knowledgeable too, or have someone in the room that can advocate, because after you give birth, you're just like, you'll have all these people telling you things and getting things from you. And sometimes it's hard and you get lost in the sauce about like what's best for your baby. And there's pressure involved. So thank you.
Hospitals like are all about just sending you home, making sure that everything is good so they can send you home. So if there are blood sugar concerns or even, you know, low blood sugar is a serious issue. Sugar is good, but you know, if they've lost some weight, they want to encourage supplementation so that your like baby is healthy and okay going home. But at the same time, you do want to kind of weigh the risks or the weigh the pros versus cons and just consider everything, all the interventions. And once again, just like giving families a chance to and educating them, doing lots of skin to skin. It's amazing what skin to skin can do. And, you know, a lot of NICUs are encouraging it just because we know that your breasts and your heartbeat regulates your baby's heartbeat. And the warmth of your body is warming up your body or your baby's body. So, you know, doing a lot of that. And so I would do skin to skin with both babies. And really crazy is both breasts can change in temperature to accommodate each baby.
Wow. What? See, this is why I love our bodies. Like, what? Girl, bye. That's amazing. There's a lot of stuff we can do naturally for sure. And our bodies are meant to do this a lot of times. So like there, I just love knowing the naturopath if you can, because the hospital, they mean well. And not saying every hospital is like this, but they have an agenda, and it's to get babies home safe. It's to get the baby out safely. And sometimes they're going to push for a C-section because there's lower risk. They know they can control whatever they're doing. Same with a lot of things. But I love that you're giving this context of different things that your body naturally does that can help. Okay. So now I love that you're saying, because I thought when I was envisioning myself breastfeeding twins, that I would just automatically tandem feed, like boop, I'll just pop them on the breast. But that, like, it's very much, I had to get used to feeding one at a time. And I feel like even maybe they got a little bit bigger. I don't know what week it was, maybe week three, before I really was like plopping them on the pillow and just comfortable tandem feeding. And even then, like you said, your husband would like hand you one. Like my husband was very involved in the beginning stages of like that he change a diaper and give me one baby and get that position, then change the diaper and give me the other baby. So it really was a two person thing. And I'm excited or intrigued to hear that that was the same experience, it seems like, for you, even with all the prior experience. So would you say that that first, like, when did you start really tandem feeding easily on your own? And would you say that one at a time was definitely necessary in the very beginning too for you?
Yeah, I would say one at a time gave me the confidence too, because every baby is so different. And even as a lactation consultant, I've helped families with their fifth and sixth baby. And they're like, what? New babies, you know,
this is my
baby. But every baby is so different. So it was important for me as well to just get confident in my ability to nurse this baby and then my ability to nurse that baby. And even just for them to practice and me figuring out how to position with this baby, you know, that's so different than maybe my first baby, you know? So I felt like it was important for me to just practice. And then once I got the hang of it with each baby, which honestly didn't take long. I know sometimes it can take a lot longer for some families versus others. So I felt like they each got the hang of breastfeeding pretty early on. So I think the first time I tandem fed them was 4 days postpartum, which was not ideal for me because I still didn't feel as confident. I just didn't know how to position them. Like, how do you position two wobbly babies? So
did you use a pillow or like,
which one did friend pillow?
Yeah.
Twin breast friend. So when I first started, I had one baby. I don't know if you can see me, but had one baby in like the cradle hold and then the other baby in the football hold. So they kind of that way. And then I also tried out laying both of them football hold, which I know is the more common one. So there's a lot of practice kind of like figuring out how I feel comfortable, how they feel comfortable, what feels awkward, you know, do I have with breastfeeding in this position versus the other. So there was a lot of like trial and error, and I have a whole highlight on my Instagram on twin postpartum. So I show you the real raw behind the scenes, like those early days, those messy feedings. And so there's like a lot of trial and error and practice. But then I think I started tandem feeding a lot more, probably around 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I was kind of thrown into it too. One time we were out doing errands, had both twins. My older two were at daycare and school, and my husband ran into the grocery store, like just grab a few things. And both babies were asleep when he went in. And just as he went in, both of them just hysterically crying. And I was like, I don't have enough twins. I'm like, God, why didn't you give twin ones?
So, yes.
You know.
Yeah.
So I had like one crying baby and the other one, and trying to like figure out tandem feeding. I didn't have my pillow.
Oh my gosh. That is wild. It was
very stressful, but somehow I got them both on the breasts in the car and was just like feeding them. It worked out, calmed them down, put them to sleep. Yeah. And then by the time we were done, my husband came back to the car.
Right. Of course. Like just the nick of time. Right. I love that. And I think so. Something you're naming is, you use a breast friend pillow. I use the twinsy pillow. I do think like you don't need necessarily a pillow with singletons, but with twins, it really was helpful the days you could use it. Like I know you have this car experience, but having a pillow or something to just prop them on, I would say was like very necessary for me, especially when they're just new babies. The football hold was something I liked the best for some reason. That's just what my babies like, but we'll definitely link your highlight reel because there's a lot of different positions you can use with babies. And again, like she said, like Laura said, every baby's different. So fill out your babies. And then I think one thing that you're naming as well is around like, well, one thing I remember is did you switch babies on the boobs? Like, cause I had something I like literally blacked out about. I was like, were you on this boob? Were you on this boob? Because literally every baby's different. So if, like they ate differently. So if they were on the same boob all the time, my boobs would be drastically different sizes. And they were, cause I kept on forgetting to switch. So anyways, I'm asking you, did you have a system for switching? Like what would you tell twin moms who are like no sleep and like, you know, all the things.
Yeah. So I know some people will like track. I didn't track. I honestly just kind of went with my memory. But yet you're right. You're sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. You remember. I want to say a few feeds. I might have like used a bracelet.
Yeah.
Maybe a hair tie. Always the one who had the bracelet or the hair tie. And so every time I finished nursing, I would switch. And so I knew that baby A was due breast. And then, so yeah, it is important to change up which baby is on each breast. I know some people think that, you know, one breast is always for baby A, one is always right. for baby. But it is important to switch them up. And that is because, like you said, your breasts will adjust and one might be super a lot fuller than the other one. And also just for the baby, you want them to get a balance in their eyesight. So if they're always in one position, one eye can get a little stronger than the other. And then you also don't want them to develop a side preference. So if they're always in this like position, they can start to get a side preference and you want them to go back and forth. And bottle feeding, it's actually really important. And I know we don't do it because we always feed with our dominant arm, but it is good to bottle feed and switch each side for each, just for kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Well, I'm not having any more babies, but I hope it's good to know for people who are listening. Okay. And I do want to back up just a second because we were very fortunate. Both of our baby sets were born like 38 weeks, 39 weeks. And a lot of twin parents do not have that luxury. There are a lot, like 70%, I think, are born premature. So they are probably not taking them home with them right away or being able to put them on the breast right away. They might not even have the tongue ability or the strength to breastfeed. So what do you say or what advice do you give to those moms who want to breastfeed their babies eventually, but they were premature and so they're pumping or trying to get a supply? What do you say to them and what advice do you have?
Yeah, so I would definitely be set up with the pump and a big thing. Pump is you want to be removing milk, you know, every 2 to 3 hours. I would say make sure you get your flange size checked. A lot of hospital lactation consultants, I feel like, aren't up to date to the newest research recommendations. And so making sure that you have the right flange size. So I would say about like 95% of the moms I see are much smaller than the 21, even 19 millimeter flange. And typically what comes with your pump is the 24. And so majority of parents are not even close to a 24 millimeter flange. So you'll need to be sized and find a different flange size. And then I would also, when you are in the NICU visiting, like try to do skin to skin if you're able to. Obviously, depending on how many weeks gestation your baby is and, you know, what all is involved in their particular situation, you might not be able to. But if you can, try to do lots of skin to skin just because that will help your body just know like, okay, there's a baby and it can help making milk. And then when you're home, look at pictures of your baby, maybe even smell, like bring something that smells like them, like a blanket, a receiving blanket or something. I think there's also a big risk of creating an oversupply too. I wouldn't say this is as much with twins because you need to empty both breasts because you have two babies, but oftentimes like singletons, they're pumping both sides, but typically only the baby would really only need maybe that one side. So I guess I wouldn't say that's a huge concern oversupply. I mean, it definitely can be. But yeah, I mean, trying to pump, also just making sure you're taking care of yourself. So nutrition is a huge part. And I also would say that that really helped with me and like mental health and just my recovery and just feeling better those early days is nutrition. And I feel like I don't talk about this enough.
No, let's talk about it because, okay.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
one thing I want to just clarify for those who are hearing about the flange size and don't know what that is, like I didn't. It's like the size of like the cup that comes around your nipple that does the suction. And if your shit hurts, like mine hurts when I was pumping, it's not supposed to. So I didn't even know that till my baby was like long and done breastfeeding. And it's literally the one that comes in the Spectra thing that you order online, or the Medaya, is probably not your size. So that's what she's naming. And if you're pumping and it's painful, odds are you don't have the right flange sides, but I just wanted to clarify that.
It should feel like butter. Just go in and out.
What? Like what? I thought I was just supposed to endure this pain and like have these anyways, I'm not going to scare y'all. I digress, but just make sure you check your flange sides. Okay. But fast forward. Yes. Nutrition. Okay. Like, cause I feel like as moms, let's talk about nutrition while you're breastfeeding. We get so many questions around like people who feel like they're not making enough. Is there a miracle like cupcake or whatever they can buy online to produce more milk? But also I feel like when I was in the thick of it, not sleeping, I was incredibly hungry and thirsty. And so luckily my partner would probably bring me a sandwich sometimes, but other times I'm just grabbing like crusts of like pizza from the night before and just chugging water and doing whatever I can to just fill like that belly of like my need to have food and hydration. But yeah, can we talk about nutrition and like for the moms that might be struggling, what are like some key things that they might want to prioritize when they're breastfeeding? And then we'll even talk about further and postpartum as well. But yeah.
Yeah. So nutrition obviously is foundational. So
yeah,
a lot of people think that once you have the baby, your nutrition doesn't really matter. Like you're done growing the baby during pregnancy, but breastfeeding is actually more demanding on the body than pregnancy. So I'm sure during pregnancy, you need 200 to 300 extra calories. Well, breastfeeding, you need an extra 500 calories. And especially with twins, you might even need upward to like 800 extra calories. Yeah. And so that's just so much more demanding. And other health professionals have found that it's, like the brain requires 25% of your energy needs, whereas breastfeeding requires 30%. So it's like, well, no wonder you're so hungry. And then you just delivered, depending on how you delivered, whether that was a vaginal, unmedicated, or a C-section, or episiotomy, how long was your labor? Long induction, like, you know, there's all these things, you know, did you lose a lot of blood? And so you're very nutrient depleted. And then sleepless nights, you're not sleeping well. Any like maybe trauma, birth trauma, like mental parts, like all of this takes a toll on your body. And then if you're not eating, you know, nutrient dense foods, like getting adequate protein, like protein. Yeah. Amino acids. So amino acids are the building blocks of protein. They make neurotransmitters, which is so important. So, you know, you think tryptophan, I don't know if you've heard about like Thanksgiving time, but turkeys has tryptophan, and that's why you're a little like sleepy.
Like you get the itis. We call it the itis, where you're just like, okay, I need to take a nap, like after a big meal like that. Okay.
So tryptophan is an amino acid that is very calming. It makes serotonin, which is that feel good hormone. So amino acids make neurotransmitters. They help with hormones. So, you know, prolactin and oxytocin are the two main hormones for breastfeeding. So we need protein, those amino acids, for hormone production. And then amino acids also make digestive enzymes and enzymes throughout the body. So like protein really is foundational, and I don't think people are getting enough of that. You might be getting enough in one meal, like you have a steak dinner, but what about breakfast? What about lunch? What about your snacks? Are you eating enough? Are you getting enough protein? Collagen, which is also considered one of your protein sources. It's technically not a complete protein as it's missing tryptophan, but it is a great source of glycine, which is another amino acid that is so important for wound healing.
Even
if you didn't have episiotomy or a C-section, like there's no obvious wounds, you have a giant plate-sized wound inside your body where the placenta is attached. So even if you can't see, you have a giant wound inside your body. And so you're going to need to focus on that protein, focus on that collagen. And we get collagen from like bone broth. The skin of like rotisserie chicken. So if you're doing a whole chicken, enjoy that crispy skin.
Okay, got it. I love that's my favorite part. All right, nice.
is a great source of collagen. Meat that's closer to the bone is going to be higher in protein or collagen. So a lot of times we do a lot of muscle meat like chicken breasts, but enjoy some chicken thighs, enjoy some drumsticks. If you're vegan, vegetarian, obviously you're not going to get that collagen, but if you can also just focus on protein, you know, beans, legumes, you know, tofu and quinoa, you know, other protein sources. Iron is another big mineral you want to focus on because you've lost some blood. So we want to replenish our iron stores. So eating, you know, meats. I did some liver. So if you want to incorporate some liver, that's a good source. And then, of course, you want to add carbohydrates. You want to add fiber-specific carbs. So lots of fruits and vegetables and preferably cooked fruits and vegetables. Vegetables, because since your organs are kind of all over the place from pregnancy, it's harder on your digestive tract when you eat a lot of raw fruits and vegetables. So if you wanted to do cooked, that's going to be easier on your digestive tract. So it's kind of like pre-digested vegetables. So soups, stews, curries, like those are really great first foods postpartum. And then, I know in Chinese medicine, they believe after you've had a baby, you're in this shock, like you're in this cold state, your body's like cold. And so you need more warm, nourishing foods to help heal. Yeah. So that's where kind of those soups and stews are also really beneficial and helpful.
I mean, that's like, I don't know if it's Chinese medicine or there is some, in a specific Asian culture, I don't want to misspeak, but like they, after the woman gives birth, like they have their own nurse, the woman, like they just make her like this, like soup, like this seaweed, tofu, heavy. And that's like, and like they have their own, like baby's taken care of by other people. And then the mom is just sitting, nursing and drinking this soup. That's like so important. And like doesn't do anything else. And I'm like, ideally, if we had the perfect system in our country, there'd be something like that. But I do think there is this huge healing process that you have to go through after pregnancy. Right. Yeah. So this is what I would say to people who are like, you know, maybe didn't meal prep or their baby came early and all these things. And you have friends and people are like, what can I bring? Ask them to bring food, but like specify maybe like protein, like nutrient food. Like, yes, great lasagna. Cool. But can you bring me like a bone broth with some like good, you know, something like that? I wish now looking back that's I was specifically requesting because people want to help. If you don't specify, they'll just bring whatever. You know, my first meal was sushi because I was like, I have to.
That's your body. Iodine, like you were saying, the seaweed soup and a lot of people with sushi. It's a great, great, great source of iodine. And we need iodine for thyroid support as well as lactation. So your breast tissue love iodine. So iodine is important mineral. And fish is a great source of iodine. Seaweed is a great source. And because your thyroid takes such a hit during pregnancy and then breastfeeding, it's kind of like your body just knows what it needs. And like you're eating that sushi, it's like your body knows it needs more of that iodine.
Okay. That's actually really helpful. Okay. So now I'm going to like, just because a lot of the moms listening, and especially as this season we're in, I feel like groceries and everything is so expensive where we know what we're supposed to eat. We're like supposed to have like fruits and vegetables, like these high protein meals. But let's say you're kind of on a lazy lunch or you're just not able to afford, like what would be like your go-to, like, okay, girl, if you can't get this, like grab a can of beans. Like, what would you say to those moms who are in it like that?
Yeah. I would say, don't be afraid of convenience foods.
Like,
first world country, we have like Trader Joe's, Sam's Club, BJ's, you know, Costco. They have healthy, ready to go meals. We did some like chicken breasts or even like drumsticks that were ready to go. And then I would buy a bag of frozen vegetables that you can just pop in the microwave. Even canned salmon, canned tuna. Sardines are a great source of omega-3 fatty acids, which can help with inflammation, as well as baby's brain development. So, and then also that iodine and selenium that we were just talking about. out. So don't be afraid of canned foods. I feel like a lot of people think with healthy, it's kind of like this all or nothing mentality. Like you either have to make everything from scratch and like cut all your vegetables, everything gourmet.
Kill the chicken. Like,
And I'm like, no, you can make healthy meals. Like where is your protein? Where is your fiber and a healthy fat? So canned salmon is a great source of that protein as well as that healthy fat. Add some whole wheat bread to it. Maybe a side of, you know, some cooked vegetables. Like I did a lot of edamame. I love that. It's a great source of fiber as well as that protein. Add some avocado, add eggs. And I know eggs can get expensive. Even if you're doing like oatmeal, add some protein. So cheese, hemp seeds, peanut butter. Yogurt.
I'm like getting hungry. I need to eat. Okay, this is super helpful. And I want to think about like, that's like, I feel like I was very nutrition conscious when my kids were little while I was still breastfeeding. And now I suck. Like I just, my protein is goldfish. Like literally, it's just hard. I think I don't know. I think I underestimate it, or maybe just I'm getting less healthy as my kids get older. Like I'm trying to make sure that they eat right, but I'll make myself a separate thing, or I'll just eat whatever they don't eat. So for the moms of like toddlers, which is a lot of our listeners and me, and you, is it still important to concentrate on nutrition? I know that's the first question. I know the answer to that, but then B, like, how? What does that look like?
I mean, I'm there with you. It's hard. It really is hard. And I always say your brain has to lead you. Like you're not going to feel like eating. You're not going to feel like prioritizing yourself, you know, especially when you have so many other things. You're running your business. You have the house to clean. Like you have other things. Are you really going to take time to sit down and eat? Yeah. Like you're probably going to put yourself on the back burner. So your mind has to tell you like, no, I need to eat. Food is fuel. You might not actually feel hungry, but the signs that you are hungry are that fatigue, brain fog, irritability. So a lot of people think that mom rage and just like being snappy is just a part of motherhood. Like, no, you're hangry. You need to eat. Food is fuel. Going back to that protein, those amino acids, they help with hormones, those neurotransmitters, which help with your mood. Protein also keeps your blood sugar steady. So if you're skipping breakfast and just having coffee, this is going to cause a blood sugar dip, which is going to cause you to be hangry and irritable and you know, maybe have more cravings just to get that blood sugar back up, but then you're on this roller coaster. And so if you can start your day with a good protein breakfast, like kind of what we said, like eggs or that oatmeal or even a PB&J. I love PB&J. Really? It can be a great source of, you know, your breakfast. You know, whole wheat bread can have 3 to 5 grams of protein, and then peanut butter has 8 grams of protein. Add some collagen powder to your coffee. That's 15 grams. Yeah. So I encourage at least trying to get at least like 20 to 30 grams per meal. But yeah, prioritizing breakfast, and then with your kids, like just try to say me too. Like I'm not putting them first. I am meeting their needs, but I'm also meeting my needs too. So saying me too. And I say to my kids, like, hold on, mommy needs to eat or something, or they want to play and they're all done with their food. I say, hold on, mommy, we'll play with you. I'm just going to eat my food. I need to have energy too. And I talk a lot with my kids about how food makes them feel. And, you know, we talk about protein. It helps you be strong. And my son, my 3-year-old, is like, I'm so strong. And, you know, they know that fruits and vegetables help them go poop. And so I think it's great to talk about food, and, you know, I don't demonize any foods, like even junk food. I call them fun food. You know, we can have some fun here and there, but we also need food that makes us strong, that helps us poop. And they know about the importance of drinking water for hydration. I talk about like our body can be both like a grape, nice and plump and squishy and, you know, tasty, or it can be a raisin. So, you know, I think talking to your kids about it is great. And, you know, still practicing that protein, fiber, healthy fats kind of balance. But yeah, just really trying to prioritize yourself too. And it's not putting your kids' needs on the back burner. Obviously we want to meet them, especially if you're newborn. You're not going to say, no, I'm going to let you just cry so that I put myself first. Like, you're going to meet their needs, but then you're also going to meet your needs. And there's so many times when I'm eating while holding my toddler or my baby, I'm nursing my baby while I'm eating. Like, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. And I want to come back to a little bit with the mom stuff in a second, but I love what you're naming. And I'm going to try this with toddlers, where your kids are pretty, like, my kids are now 4 and they understand, like, they know, they're learners. If you tell them, like, if I'm like, just eat this because you need to, they're going to be like, no, why? But if I say this actually makes you stronger, this like grape versus raisin comparison, I could see that resonating. Cause even when I'm like, I did do that the other day with like some grilled chicken breast. I was like, you need to eat this because if you do want to be strong, and then they ate it. And so I just think that we shouldn't underestimate our kids' ability to be critical thinkers. Mm-hmm. And so if you give them the rationale or reasoning, not to say that always works, y'all, like toddlers be toddlering, but
yeah,
maybe like, you know, continuing that, because my kids were going through just this beige eating phase where it was buttered noodles, chicken nuggets, like my like one vegetable was ketchup, literally. Like, it was just, I was going through this phase, and we always do smoothies. I found like one smoothie that it has like spinach and kale that they love. It has pineapple juice. They will always drink that. So I like do that at least a few times a week. But for the parents who are stuck in this rut of maybe their kids are just toast, pasta, buttered noodles, like all that type of thing, maybe they have some fruit. Is that really bad, or should, like, I'm just curious, because I feel like there's a lot like that. And if there's a goal, like, do they have to eat a vegetable every day? Or is it kind of like as long as there's something through the week? Like, I'm just curious from a nutritionist standpoint, what would you say with that?
Yeah. So I practice the division of responsibility. I don't know if you've heard of that phrase,
no.
But it's where you are the parent. So you decide what, when, and where. So what the food is going to be, when you're going to serve the food, and where at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Your kid that decides how much are they going to eat of it. So I never pressure my kids and say, like, you have to eat it, because you don't want to put that pressure on them. But also, this is what mommy made. This is what's on the menu. You don't have to eat it, but I'm not going to make you something else. I'm not your chef.
Yes. So that's like that's how we were raised too. Like, I'm like, we ate what was there, and if we didn't, we were okay. Like, but I think sometimes I'm like they'll do that, and then I'll see them like hours later near bedtime, and they somehow have like a go, like, you know, an applesauce pouch. I'm like, where the hell did you get that? Like, and that, like, my husband, like, well, they were hungry. I'm like, no, this is not good. Like, they're going to learn that they can do this. So I think this, I love this what, when, where.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing I try to do is, I learned this from the account Veggies and Virtue on Instagram. So shout out to her. But she practices the love it, like it learning method with food. So you always give a food that you know they love. So your buttered noodles.
Yeah.
You give a like it food. So it might be like hit or miss. Sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. Yeah. And then learning food. So that's the new food. And with those new foods, when I give it with my kids, I tell them, this is a new food. You've never tried this before. Is it squishy? Is it crunchy? Is it slimy? Is it sweet? Is it sour? And sometimes they'll be like, I don't want this food. But then they try it to answer the question, is it slimy or crunchy? And sometimes they don't like it. And I say, that's fine. I don't like a lot of foods, and I'm not going to force myself to eat it. But sometimes they'll find themselves actually liking it and taking more bites. So I try to, you know, kind of give those new learning foods, expose them with something that they do like. And, you know, they're still toddlers sometimes.
Yeah, toddlers be toddlers. Yeah, exactly. I'm curious, before we go, I'm going to talk about the mom stuff in a second, but what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten off of your toddler's plate? Like, you know how we do? Yeah, I'm just curious. Like, you know how we all eat like random stuff? Like, I just thought of this question.
I don't know. I can't think of it on the spot. I'm sure there's been some weird things, but
yeah, I'm just like, I'm trying to think. I think the other day I had like just a cold half-eaten like crust of PB&J, and I was like, this is my life. Like, this is what my breakfast is, and it was what it was. But, you know, we all have those days. So
I love that you're a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
They still have a lot of food, then I just put it in the fridge and offer it later. Like, if they tell me, mommy, I'm hungry, I'm saying, well, you didn't eat your lunch, but here it is, you know.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
And then I also, if they do want a snack, back and maybe they didn't eat a whole lot or they really did not like it. I don't want to like force them to eat it if they really didn't like it, but they only have one snack option, or I guess two snack options. That's a string cheese or a rice cake with peanut butter. So they can't just free, you know, like get any snack they want. Like I have, this is the snack, you know, and they like those things, but they know that's the only snack option. So I'm not going to just give them goldfish, especially if they
lunch. Two things I'm thinking about this is like this, this new food. Cause my girls, and especially twins, one thing that's, I think a little bit easier about twins is like, if one tries something, they might like, it kind of encourages the other. Like I just had to get one to be like, okay, I'll try this new food. And the other might be like, okay, fine, I'll try it. But this whole like new, like it, whatever, learn it. I think it will actually work. We'll see. And then that, like my girls feel like they're going to the grocery store anytime it's like snack time. It's like, they'll have like a granola, like they'll just look in the pantry. And I'm like, maybe if I didn't give them all these options, they don't know what's there. Okay. This is just two things I'm definitely taking away. That's super helpful.
And you can certainly buy. I mean, like I said, I'm not a Nazi, even though I'm a dietitian. I still will buy veggie straws. They like that. But I'll give that a snack with their meal, or like if we're out and about, it's not a snack that they can have because they skipped out on lunch or dinner. Like it, you know.
What is your thoughts on like pouches? Because we do a lot of applesauce pouches, and like my one girl loves chia seeds, which I think are pretty healthy, Lauren. But like I did hear something about eating out of a pouch, not being able to, it can do something with eaters. And I'm curious your thoughts on that. I just like thought of this question right now though.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything, it's important to have balance. So I think it's their only way of getting vegetables or fruits like apples, or, you know, their primary source is purees, then that's not great. But if it's like here and there, I think it's fine. If you really only give it when like every once in a while, I think that's fine. But really you want to give them a variety of different textures.
Yeah.
And I will say like everything I'm talking about with the food, I know it can be so hard with like neurodivergent kids.
Yes.
So like, you know, this might not work. And so I don't want you to get like overwhelmed either. Like, well, this sounds great. I would love if my kid did that. So definitely there are like occupational therapists and, you know, people out there that can work with like sensory and like feeding issues and stuff.
Do what you can, y'all. Like it's literally some weeks you're good, some maybe month you're good, maybe one day you're good out of the month. Do what you can. Like these are just tips of what we can't have seen that work, but I have my months where I'm like, okay, you know what, this is what pizza every night. I realize now my breakfast for dinner, like my parents would do that, and I thought this was just like my parents being fun. I'm like, oh, they were tired as hell because they were like, you're serious
on social media.
Right, like it's like I get it now. Really quick, I want to go back because I know you have this mineral where you can take a hair follicle, because you were mentioning as moms, like some signs that you might be not getting the right nutrition is brain fog, irritability, tired. I feel like we all go through these cycles, and you actually have something where you can test a hair follicle and see where you're nutrition deficient. What is the most common nutrition deficiency do you see amongst like parents or moms in particular?
Yeah. So this is a hair tissue mineral test, and there are different ways of assessing our minerals. Minerals are our body's factory workers. You know, we have talked about iodine, iron, magnesium, sodium, potassium. These are different minerals, and we cannot get our body does not make minerals. We have to get it from our food and our water. It's in our soil. And during times of extreme stress, like pregnancy, breastfeeding, motherhood, sleepless nights, we lose a lot of these minerals. And also our baby is taking our minerals. And so it's just really important to focus on our minerals. And so we can assess our minerals via our blood, and our hair is another way to assess. And probably to answer your question, the biggest ones I see is a depletion in magnesium as well as potassium. There's a lot of stress on your thyroid as well. So I've seen some like abnormal levels of thyroid, so not necessarily like TSH, T3, T4, but potassium, and we need potassium to transport thyroid hormone into the cells. And, you know, a lot of us aren't eating tons of potato. I mean, I guess some people, but like bananas or, you know, root vegetables are great sources of potassium, but potassium, magnesium is a big one. Also, I would say like iron too. Yeah. So
I think magnesium, Shelly told me about this. I think you did. I don't know, but she was like sleeping, right? Like I think sleep and magnesium. So I started, I think it was through you. She's like, I started taking magnesium because like she'd done something with you for help with sleep. And then I just randomly did it and it was helping so much and I ran out of it. But like, is what would magnesium do if you were depleted in it and you started to take like a supplement or drink it at night? What would that feel like for a mom that might be depleted?
Yeah. I mean, magnesium is responsible for hundreds of different bodily functions. And one of them is like that rest and relaxation. Mm-hmm. And I always say that we can't control the number of hours of sleep we get if we have a newborn with babies, but we can focus on the quality sleep that you do get, even if it's only a 3-hour stretch. Can that be quality sleep? And so magnesium, specifically magnesium glycinate, so there's different forms of magnesium. Magnesium glycinate can be really helpful for sleep and just like rest and relaxation. Magnesium citrate bicarbonate is really helpful for constipation. So I would up that during my pregnancy in those early days postpartum to help with good bowel movements.
Yeah.
So yeah, magnesium is super important. The RDA is 350 milligrams, but with the demands of like pregnancy and breastfeeding and just motherhood in general, you might even need upwards to like 500 milligrams. So obviously minerals work together. So, you know, some people might not do well with that high of a dose. You need to work like slower and work up. We need sodium and potassium to work with magnesium as well. So I recommend mineral mocktails. I don't know if you've seen me talk about that on Instagram.
Yeah. What is that? Yeah. Can you explain like,
So mineral mocktails is basically just like an electrolyte drink and you're essentially adding electrolytes into your day to day. And you can make some fun recipes, which is where like the mineral mocktails, like a cocktail, but you can add like a splash of orange juice, but then you're adding like a pinch of salt, maybe some coconut water, maybe cream of tartar, which is a source of potassium. And so you're like making your own mineral drink. And every single person that I've had incorporate this, including myself, have noticed improvements in energy, improvements in digestion, improvements in brain fog. So this is such an easy, small step that you start to do to start to feel better and feel energized is getting those electrolytes. So electrolytes creates an electrical charge in your body, which can help with your cells and your body functioning optimally. I've even had myself and clients notice an increase in their milk supply, and they actually give electrolytes to dairy cows. So being in Texas right now, we still live in Hawaii, but now we're in Texas. I talk to a lot of dairy farmers and they're all about giving their cows minerals and focusing on their nutrition and giving them like salt sticks because it helps with their recovery. It helps with their milk supply. And, you know, you notice these like, lactation drinks and stuff like that, that are out there and they're super expensive, but it comes down to electrolytes.
Yes.
In a lot of Facebook groups like Gatorade and Body Armor. I don't typically recommend those just because there's a lot of sugar and artificial ingredients. But, you know, if you want to make your own electrolyte drink, I usually do like different premixed versions like the brand Needed, Relight.
Yes, I love Needed.
So there, Just Ingredients is another one. Like there's a bunch of good quality electrolyte premixes that you can do. So I have one every single day.
Okay, noted. Like, as I feel like if you're a mom listening and you, like for me, I am guilty of right now, I'm just in a season of, I drink coffee first thing. I skip breakfast. And then I'm like, okay, I didn't eat. Let me eat this bag of popcorn. Like it's just, I'm just not. And it's like a cycle, right? It doesn't feel good. I'm irritable. I'm not sleeping. But that reset feels, I've been very conscious of my health before, like just for other reasons. I did a whole gut health thing and I remember feeling so amazing. Like I didn't even need coffee and I was sleeping and I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot how I wasn't suffering. So for the ones listening, I want to link the mocktails that you're talking about, whatever those highlight reels are. For people who want to follow along with like everything, all the resources you have, what is your Instagram? Also, I know you have a mineral guide, a birth course, all these different things. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram. That's where I mostly hang out. It's aloha.nutrition. I have a free mineral mocktail. So if you're kind of curious, want to learn some DIY recipes, I have my free guide on that. And then I also do hair tissue mineral testing. So if you're curious in knowing what you specifically need.
Yes, I'm actually. Need,
We can do that. And then I also have a course called the Beyond Birth course, which is all about postpartum nutrition. And then I have my baby ready course, which is all for pregnant parents that are preparing for the postpartum period, like how to get breastfeeding off to a good start, how to address nutrition and just like foods to focus on for those early weeks and months. So there's a lot of support out there. Mm-hmm. You do not have to feel like, you know, low energy or just like feel like crap. Like you should be motherhood. Like, it takes a lot of work and intentionality, but you can enjoy motherhood. Like I had four kids, five and under, but, and I'm not going to say it's easy, like it's definitely overwhelming, but when you can, you know, include yourself with eating and drinking mineral mocktails and getting that protein, like you will feel so much better and just be able, just feel like you can handle things and like your stress tolerance is better. Like things don't irk you as much as if you were hangry.
Yes, I love that. Because I was going to ask you what's one like final piece of advice. And I love that. It's we don't have, you don't know you're suffering until like, it's almost like people who haven't worn glasses yet, but they finally get a pair of glasses. And so like, oh, you can see leaves, like distinctions. And like, yeah, that's what everyone else sees. And so all to say, you don't have to feel how you feel all the time. And if you like are struggling, it's completely, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And there might be like ways around. It might just be something as simple as doing nutrition for you in like affordable ways or in ways that you're making your own kind of mocktails, not necessarily buying a bunch of Gatorade or buying a bunch of different supplements. But I think it's just very helpful to be knowledgeable about what your body might need. Like something as simple as magnesium versus like, you know, NyQuil or ZQuil or something like I need to sleep. Like there's ways that like nutrients and minerals are supposed to be in our body. And like, I think I'm going to like now we should talk offline. I want to do this test because I'm like, I remember I wasn't suffering before. And so I just thank you so much, Allegra, for like all the knowledge you have.
Yeah. And for self-grace, you know, this season is hard.
The season is hard. Yes. And if you are a mom listening, you're not behind. You're raising two humans, at least if you're a twin mom and you probably haven't peed alone in weeks. Still, you know, you're still doing great. And, you know, just give yourself grace, like Allegra said. So thank you, Allegra, so much for being a part of this today. I can't wait for people to get your resources and to start to feel better. But this has been another episode of That Twin Mama Podcast, y'all. Catch you in the next one.
And that's a wrap for this episode of That Twin Mama Podcast. But before you go, let me tell you how you can keep this village growing. First things first, are you subscribed? If not, what are you doing? Hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening so you never miss a new episode. We're streaming on all major platforms, so let's make it official. Secondly, let's stay connected on socials. Follow us on That Twin Mama Podcast on Instagram for short form relatable content, and follow us on YouTube at That Twin Mama Podcast for entire episodes in all of their glory. And lastly, and this is a big one, if you liked what you heard today, please leave a review. Your 5-star love means so much to me and the team behind the scenes and helps us to keep going. It also helps us to find parents like you who need to listen to these episodes, which mean the world. So until next time, take care of you, take care of your crew, and remember, you're doing an amazing job. See you soon. Peace.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.